Okay, let's go on to carry on a little bit with the sutta again. So we're looking at these things, and you will notice that all the way through, it may sound negative, but you will see that what I'm talking about on the one hand, the one side which is problematic, and then the solution on the other hand. The solution is always the spiritual practice, right? So this is what I'm saying, and this is not negative overall. The overall picture is kind of just showing you the direction in which we want to lean the mind. Yeah, this is the purpose of all of this. So it is a bit negative about the world, but I think sometimes we need a balance. But it is positive about the spiritual practice. There is a solution to these problems. This is what is important here. Okay, let's go on to the next verse. The world around was hollow. All directions were in turmoil. Wanting a home for myself, I saw nowhere unsettled. The idea here, the world around is hollow. The idea of hollow is that there is nothing substantial in the world. There's no way you can hold on to where you will be safe, because it will never change, right? There's nothing in the world that is permanent, that is always there, that you can rely on. This is a core aspect of the Buddha's teachings. And because of that, you can never feel safe. Yeah, whenever you take your stand somewhere, this is one of the ways I like to look at this. Whenever you stand down, you kind of think you can rest. As soon as you take your stand, someone or the world comes and pulls the carpet out from under your feet. There is nowhere to take your stand. And that's kind of scary, right? This is what it means. The world is in turmoil, always changing, always moving on, always moving to something else. And because we are human beings, we want stability. We want things that we can attach to. Why? Because we attach all the time. And once you attach, you want stability. And the world is never going to give you that stability that you desire. This is the fundamental problem with existence. The reason that we want stability is because of the sense of self, ultimately. The sense of self craves for stability. Because once you have a self, you identify with something, and because you think that is you, once it changes, it becomes very problematic, because you are identifying with it. The very idea that we identify with something means that we want stability within us, but also outside of us. And so when that stability cannot be found, it creates a very problematic situation for us. Yeah, the world is hollow. The directions are in turmoil. There's nowhere to stand, nothing to hold on to, nothing to attach to, nothing to grasp, nothing we can rely on in the world. The world is inherently unreliable. That's very unpleasant. And so you withdraw your interest from that world. You look in a new direction for meaning and purpose in life. That is inwards on the spiritual path. And then the Buddha to be, he says he wants a home for him. We all want a home, right? A home is a place where you can feel at ease, when you can relax, you can kind of, you know what it's like to have a nice apartment, yeah? A place where you can kind of close the door and you can kind of enjoy yourself with your entertainment. You can cook, make some nice food for yourself and hang out with your family. Everyone wants a home, because a home is a refuge from the world outside. We don't want to live under a bridge, right? In a cardboard box, that's unpleasant. We want to have a real solid brick and mortar home. But then he says, I saw nowhere unsettled. The meaning of this is something like, there is no rest. I saw nowhere where I can find a rest. This is what, it's a bit strange, this I saw nowhere unsettled. But the idea is there's nowhere I can rest. There's nowhere I can really relax. Why? Because everything is in turmoil. A home, a place where you can really be at ease, that is always going to be safe for you. There is no such thing in the world. And so the Buddha has this beautiful idea of seeing the world as borrowed goods. Yeah, everything in life is borrowed. We have it for a while, then we have to give it up. There is no such thing as a home that we can hold on to. And once you start to see your life, the things in your life, as borrowed things, that is where you start to have a more realistic outlook on what life really is about. There is no home. There is nowhere safe, nowhere where you can relax and be at ease. It's kind of unpleasant, isn't it? Is the Buddha right about this? Or is he wrong? Do you want to hear this, or do you want to hear something else? Do you want to hear something life-affirming, or do you want to hear the Buddha's teaching him? Anyway, so it is kind of, this is kind of the power of the Buddha to be. This is what makes him so powerful. He looks at the world squarely and he sees what is actually there. He doesn't see what he wants to see. Most of the time, people, we all see what we want to see in the world. But the power of the Buddha is the ability to actually be straight up about what's going on. Okay, then how do we deal with it? Yet even in the settlement, they fight. Even when you try to settle, when actually there's nowhere to settle, you keep on fighting. Seeing that, I grew uneasy, or I grew discontent, or I grew dissatisfied. This is kind of the point here. Arati means dissatisfied, not happy with what's going on. And then I saw a dart there, so hard to see, stuck in the heart. We see people fighting all the time, even when they try to settle down, they still keep on fighting. And the Buddha becomes discontent. He's already said that he's fearful, now he's discontent. He doesn't want to have anything to do with this anymore. He wants to get rid of all of that. And then he looks more carefully, and what he is looking for next is the cause for all of these things. And this is kind of the dart. The dart is the cause that lies behind all this unrest, all this instability, all this craving, all this desire to make the world your kind of world, which leads to conflict and all of that. All of this conflict, all of these problems are caused by this dart. Dart is always craving in Buddhism. It is hard to see. It is stuck in the heart. It is hard to see. This is kind of the... Why is it hard to see? And the reason why it is very hard to see is because very often we enjoy the craving. We don't see the craving as a problem. We think craving is something positive. You desire in the world. If you have craving, craving makes life meaningful, right? What would you do if you didn't have any craving? Sit on the backside all day and do nothing? Craving is what makes the world go round, right? If we crave, that's when we build buildings, we create societies. Without craving, we would just be kind of lying in bed and doing absolutely nothing. Someone is agreeing with us. So this is the problem with craving. Craving, we see craving as something positive because we feel that actually it energizes us. It makes us do things. It brings the world forward. So we think of craving as our friend. In fact, it goes so far as what we even identify with craving. We think craving is actually who we are. And the reason for that is because a very important part of our identity as human beings is the sense of being doers, of being creators, of making things in the world. I'm sure each one of you in your job, you have to be creative to some extent. You have to think of new ways of doing things. And some of you may even be artists. And of course, artists are also very much part of the creative activity. And because we identify with being creators and doers, craving is very closely related to the idea of creation. Without craving, you can't create anything. So craving feels important, because I do. You satisfy your sense of identity with the doer inside of you. And this is kind of what this is about. And this is why seeing that craving is a problem, and seeing that craving is the cause of all of these kind of things, is actually very hard, because we don't want to see that. So he sees the dart. This is the reason why we have so much turmoil in the world. It's all rooted in craving. This is the root problem. Stuck in the heart, right? Craving, it feels like it's in the heart. The drive, the desires, all of these kind of things. Haddaya nisitang. Dudasang haddaya nisitang. Dudasang is hard to see. Haddaya nisitang. Stuck in the heart. When stuck by that dart or craving, you run around in all directions. But when that same dart has been plucked out, you neither run around nor sink down. Craving, tanha dasa, the slave of craving. Craving drives you on in the world. You think you are in charge of craving, but craving is in charge of you. You are the little slave. Craving is the master. Is that true? It feels like we want craving. It feels like we want to be in charge. But actually, it's the other way around. Craving is in charge. If you try to rest, if you try to be still, if you try to enjoy the peace of the moment, you can't, because craving is more powerful. And craving says, be restless, do more, work harder. Yeah, you don't deserve to rest yet. And craving is actually in charge. Craving is the boss. And you are the little slave. And you always say, yes, master. And then you kind of run around according to the master craving. And that's kind of fascinating. When you start to see craving in that way, it kind of loses some of its appeal. So how can we know that craving is in charge, that craving is the master? Well, one of the ways of knowing that is to become peaceful in your meditation practice. And when you become really, really peaceful and you see that craving is gone, only then do you understand the problem of craving. How it makes you agitated, how it makes you restless, and how it is causes so much suffering for you. That driving on all the time actually is a state of suffering. But because we identify with it, because we think it is important, because we think craving is our friend, it's actually very hard to see it as a state of suffering. We think of it as happiness. But remember, I don't know if you came upstairs for the public talk today, but one of the sayings I mentioned there is a saying you find in the suttas, that what the noble ones think of as suffering, ordinary people think is happiness. Ordinary people think that craving is happiness. The noble one says, no, you got it all wrong. It's actually suffering. And the other way around, what the noble one thinks as happiness, the ordinary people think of as suffering. So we get things upside down. And the reason we get it upside down is the sense of identity inside of us. Once you identify with craving, you have no choice but to think it is a positive thing, because it is your identity. And then you can't see it for what it is. So you are stuck by that diet, which makes you run around. You run around here, run around doing this, and then you eventually you run and run and run. And where do you end up with all that running? You end up in your grave. And then as soon as you get reborn on the other side, you get reborn with little legs, and those legs are already running when you get reborn. And you carry on running in your next life, right? Running again and again and again and again. And it's so on and on it goes, running around in circles, never going anywhere. One of the beautiful words in the sutta is the word is saṃsārati and saṃdāvati, which means basically this eternal going around and round and round, doing the same things over. And the way they have been translated by Bhikkhu Bodhi as roaming around. Roaming, the English word roaming means like movement without destination, movement without purpose, movement without goal. That's what roaming means. It's like you're roaming the streets of KL at night. It means that you're randomly moving around the streets of KL, And you're going to be picked up by the police pretty soon if you roam around the streets too much. And this is our life. When you look at life from a perspective, you stand back, like the bird's eye view. We look like these people who roam around without destiny, doing the same things again and again and again, not really going anywhere. When you get fed up with that, that's when you become a Buddhist. And then you take a new direction. Okay, enough roaming. Let me have a direction. The Noble Eightfold Path has a direction. It has a real goal. It has a real purpose. It is called sa-attang. Sa-attang is one of the qualities of the Dhamma. Sa-attang means with purpose, with goal, with aim. It's going somewhere. It has a real destination. The destination is called Nibbana. Once you get to Nibbana, there's no more roaming around. You're finished with it once and for all. If you become, I have bad news for those of you who are Christians. Any Christians here? Okay, I'm going to talk the truth, all right? No Muslims, no Christians, no kind of... Okay, so the problem is, from a Buddhist point of view, if you believe in the Creator God, right? And then you get born with that Creator God, it is just another rebirth. It is actually not really an end, And this is kind of the problem. I mean, if you are a good Christian, it's wonderful. You're going to have a good rebirth. Many good things are going to happen to you. But it's not really making an end from a Buddhist point of view. Because that thing that you do next is just going to be another rebirth. And you're going to carry on in a certain way. And this is what kind of distinguishes the Buddhist teachings. And this is requires the insight into non-self, which is really what is Buddhism, is the hallmark of the Buddhist teachings. It requires that insight into non-self to be able to have a final goal on this path. And that is why these things actually go together. So running around in all directions, roaming around in samsara, now this life, now that life, up and down, sideways, this way and that way, not really going anywhere. But then, when that heart dart has been plucked out, you pluck out the craving by insight, by overcoming ignorance and getting real understanding of the world, then you neither run around nor sink down. The restlessness is gone. The agitation is gone. But you also don't have the opposite. You don't have the despair, the sadness that comes when your craving is not fulfilled. Yeah. So neither do you have the restlessness, nor do you have the sinking down. Sinking down can mean many things here. It could mean sadness and despair. It could maybe mean dullness and drowsiness, various kind of things. All of that is gone. All right. Okay, so that is the right view of the Buddha we have been looking at, right? This is kind of the Buddha to be. This is what he sees before his awakening, according to this. He gets this fear of the world. They're seeing the danger in the world. This is what is happening here. And so here, what we're looking at is kind of the world writ large, before we look more at the private sphere of life, your personal sphere, the family sphere. But now we're looking at kind of the world in kind of overall context. And when we talk about the world, what we mean is the world of the five senses. That is one of the important meanings of the word world in the suttas. The word, Pali word for world is loka. And the word loka is used in this particular way throughout the suttas. Yeah, so this is kind of the whole world is problematic. Yeah. And I would recommend you, when you do watch the news, for example, or you hear about the things happening in the world, the things around us, instead of despairing and being sad, remember that this is what the Buddha was saying about the world. The world is uncertain. We don't know what's going to happen next. It doesn't mean the world is always going to be bad. Sometimes it's bad, sometimes it's good. It's kind of this zigzag. We just don't know what's going to happen. And that is almost more scary, right? You have no predictability, no way to know what's going to happen next. Is it going to be the Third World War? Or it's not? Don't know. Is climate change going to be terrible? Or is it not going to be so terrible? Don't know. Is pollution going to get worse or not? Don't know. We just don't know. And this is a big problem. It always goes up and down. And there's always problems in this realm. This is what the Buddha was saying here. This is also known as the sabbaloke anabiratisanya, this non-discontent or non-delight in the entire world. Because the entire world is problematic. Non-delight in the entire world. It's kind of nice, isn't it? Reject the world. What does that mean? When you reject the world in that way, you go inwards instead, and you find the refuge within her. That is what this is about. So please don't get sad when I say all these things. Don't think that these monks, they make me so depressed. Because the point is just to guide you in a new direction, right? This is about right view at the beginning of the path, leading to samma sankappa. If you get depressed, it's miccha sankappa, wrong intention. So is anyone getting depressed? Okay. So please don't get depressed about this thing. The purpose is not depression. The purpose is to see clearly so we move in a new way. Brainwashing, that's right, yeah. The good brainwashing, the Buddha's brainwashing, the Buddha brand, the number one washing powder. That's good. Okay, so now we have seen the problem. So once we have seen the problem, we're going to have a very quick look at the solution. This is not really such an important part of this. I really want to look at right, to continue looking at right view. But I'm going to have a quick look at the solution, just to kind of go through it, and then we can move on to the next sutta afterwards. It then says on that topic, the trainings are recited. So now comes the training that you need to do to overcome the problem. Yeah, so it's kind of nice to have a quick look at it. Whatever attachments there are in the world, don't pursue them. Having pierced through sensual pleasures in every way, train yourself for quenching. Attachments, gaditani, the things that you kind of hold on to or grasp onto. Don't pursue those things in the world. This is all the five-sense world. Having pierced through the five-sense world in every way, in other words, having really understood what it is about, you train yourself for quenching. The Pali word is Nibbana. You train yourself for Nibbana. You can see the word Nibbana down there, yeah? So you train yourself for quenching. Quenching Nibbana, or extinguishment, as we said before, is the extinguishment of the defilements. And if the world of the five senses is not interesting, you want to give up the desire for that world. That's part of the Nibbana, is the extinguishment of that desire. And that also then means the extinguishment of the dukkha, the suffering that comes with it. So, what is that training? Okay. Be truthful, not rude. Free of deceit, rid of slander. Without anger, a sage would cross over the evils of greed and avarice. Yeah, so these are kind of obvious in many ways. Be truthful, not rude. Free of deceit. Obviously, this means deceit in the very core sense, in the sense that you don't deceive other people in the world, right? You're honest and straightforward. And on the spiritual path, deceit means that you show yourself as you are. You don't try to pretend to be someone you are not. So, for example, as a monastic, you show yourself with your defilements to your teacher can correct you if you're going wrong. You're free of deceiving anyone in the world. You are just honest about yourself. Okay, this is who I am, these are my weaknesses, and you don't take yourself too seriously. You're rid of slander, yeah? You stop using your mouth in bad ways. Without anger, a sage would cross over. Without anger, so giving up anger as well. Cross over the evils of greed and avarice. The idea of always amassing more, always having more. Instead of amassing more, remember what is important in Buddhism is actually to be generous. One of those nice little suttas that you find, this is found in the Devata Samyutta, the connected discourses of the Buddha. And in those, there is a sutta which talks about a simile for the idea of generosity. And the Buddha says that in a burning house, it is the pot that is rescued from the house that is useful. Yeah, all the other pots, they melt in the burning house. They're kind of gone. But the one you rescue out, that is the one that's useful. In the same way, if you have wealth in this world, it is the money or the wealth that you use for generosity. That is the wealth that is rescued. Because that gives you sustenance in the future life. You can use it in the future life as a source of happiness, a source for goodness in the future. That money, that wealth has been rescued. The rest goes on to your kids. Or it goes to the government, or it goes to whatever, right? But it's kind of not rescued in a sense of making. I'm not saying you should use all your wealth and give it all away. I'm not saying that. I'm saying you have to balance these things. But you are rescuing your wealth by using it so as to create happiness for the future. It's a nice idea. Let's carry on. Prevail over sleepiness, sloth and drowsiness. Don't abide in negligence. This is the word pamada over here, yeah? A person intent on quenching would not stand for arrogance. Prevail over sleepiness, sloth, and rather, the best way to prevail over those things is, one of the best ways is to overcome any anger and ill will you have. It can be hard to overcome these things without overcoming some of the root defilements. So give up some of your anger and ill will, give up some of your greed, and these things come down. Don't be negligent, yeah, or maybe don't be heedless. Don't be, in other words, be careful, be circumspect, think properly about what you're doing. A person who is not careful, circumspect, contemplating their life properly, that is what negligent means here. It means you are being heedless. Heedless is a very nice word in English. Heedless means you're not careful, you're not considering things properly. Always consider carefully. A person intent on quenching would not stand for arrogance. Never be arrogant. Never think that you are better. Never think you are worse. Never think you are equal. You're just a being doing its things in the world. Never really need, no need to compare yourself to anyone in the whole world. Arrogance is not a nice personality trait. And it's kind of, it's the ego, of course, that gets in the way when we become arrogant. Don't be led into lying or get caught up in fondness for form. Completely understand conceit and desist from hasty conduct. Yeah, again, pretty obvious. Don't lie. Don't get caught in fondness for form. Well, form is basically the things that we see in the world. That's what form is about. So it's all the things that we see in the world, the forms, the things that we touch. Don't get caught up in those things. Yeah, and sometimes this may mean things like other people. We are attracted to other people. That's the form that we are attracted to very often, other people. Completely understanding conceit. Yeah, don't have any sense of this inferiority, superiority, and equality conceit. Desist from hasty conduct. And again, this idea, this reminder to be careful in life. Don't be too spontaneous and do things kind of randomly, because it leads to problems down the track. Yeah. I'm just going through this fast, because otherwise it can take a long time if we can look at all of this in detail. Don't relish the old or welcome the new. Don't grieve for what is running out or get attached to things that pull you in. Don't relish the old. Don't live in the past. Yeah. Don't think, oh, in the past I was so happy. In the past everything was so wonderful. Now everything is going down the drain. No. If you are a true spiritual person, you will relish where you are now, because you're practicing well. You have a bright future if you live a spiritual life. Yeah, each one of you here, if you live well, you have a bright future. And that is kind of what you need to... So forget about the past. The past is gone. Nothing you can do about that. Don't welcome the new. Don't attach to things as soon as they arise, right? Wow, this is great. New house. Yay, attach, attach, attach. And then you have a problem when you start to see the cracks coming in that house. Don't grieve for what is running out, what is disappearing, or attach to things that pull you in. Things are always changing. Yeah. Leave things alone in the world. Yeah, have an even mind, this evenness. Go around in the world as someone who doesn't get attached or attracted or repelled by anything. This person who doesn't touch anything in the world, leaves the world untouched, comes into this world, departs. There's no trace left of you. That's the kind of the good thing. Greed, I say, is the great flood, and longing is the current. The basis, the compulsion, the swamp of sensuality, so hard to get past. Greed is a great flood. Yeah, you get driven on by greed. It's this powerful force inside of us, the craving that drags you down, moving downstream through craving. Yeah, it's a powerful current. It's very hard to resist. And basically, this is what we're trying to do on the spiritual path. Longing and greed are similar ideas. We long for something. We long for, yes, finally, that great relationship I've always been trying to find. We long for these things, never really being satisfied, and the longing goes on. And eventually, we turn around trying to end the whole idea of greed and longing. The basis, the compulsion, the swamp of sensuality, so hard to get past. The swamp of sensuality. Yeah. This is how it is found sometimes in the suttas, where the Buddha sees a herd of deer. The herd of deer is caught in a swamp, and that swamp is a swamp of sensuality. It is very sticky. Yeah. This is very challenging to get out of that sensory world. Yeah, it is very difficult because we are so used to it. And actually, in many ways, it is very attractive. Yeah, we enjoy that world in so many ways. It's easy to forget the downside. That is why it's so hard to get out of. So the swamp, bad idea. So there we are. The sage never strays from the truth. The Brahman stands firm on the shore. Having given up everything, they are said to be at peace. This is kind of the Buddhist idea. Now we are moving from the path to the result of the path. Yeah, the result of the path is the sage, the Brahman who stands firm on the shore. And of course, this is the full awakening experience. Yeah, this is what happens here. But before we do the last part of the sutta, which is the result, maybe this is a good time to stop a little bit, do a little bit of meditation, and just do a little bit of Q&A afterwards. So. Okay, everyone, so let's just do a few questions, if you have any questions, and then we can take a short break afterwards. And thank you, Nivern, for turning on the aircon. I feel really happy now, actually. It makes a big difference. Sensual pleasures are not to be underestimated. Really nice. Sukhavada, that's a good. I like that one. Sukhavada, yeah. Please, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I just want to know, because this sutta, right, from your study, can we infer that this has happened before his meeting his teacher, or during his teacher, or after?
It's very hard to say. Very difficult to say exactly when it happened. It happened sometime, probably after he left the household life. Maybe even when he was still a householder. Maybe, I don't know. You know, that's when it was reflecting on death and all of these kind of things while a householder. But sometime during that time, I would say. Probably fairly early on, because he obviously had to have a strong motivation to do what he was doing. So maybe we can say before he met his teachers, Alara Kalama and Uddaka Ramaputta. Probably before, I would guess. But it's just a guess, really.
Yeah. And then the format is like already like having, he knows the asada, gratification, danger, and nisarana.
Asada, adinava, nisarana. Yep. Yep.
The format, is it like that?
Is it like that? I would say that here it doesn't talk so much about the asada, the kind of pleasure in the sense. It talks more about the adinava. I mean, we know about the pleasures already in sensuality. This is what we know way too well, right? I mean, we focus on it all the time, the gratification of the sensory pleasures. So really what we need to learn is the adinava, the danger, because that actually is very hard to see. You know, this is why people are so attached to the sensory world. It's hard to see that. It goes against the grain. People often reject that. So I would say that here what we're seeing is we're seeing mostly the danger, and then we're seeing the path that leads to the nisarana, leads to the liberation. And now we're coming into the nisarana, I would agree. So probably here the focus on those two, I would say, yeah. Yeah. Anyone else like to say anything? Yeah. Please, yeah.
I just wanted to know, maybe a bit related to the earlier question, how is the suttas actually divided or categorized into before his awakening and after his awakening?
They are not really categorized like that, but you can tell by the sutta, you know, because the Buddha, here he's obviously talking about himself before his awakening, right? He's saying he is fearful and all of these kind of things. So you can know from the context that it is before the awakening. In many places he will say so. He will say, before my awakening, while I was still a bodhisattva, while I was still intent on awakening. So many places he will say it literally, this was before my awakening, while I was the Buddha to be. So there's quite a lot of suttas like that, surprisingly large number. This is what the focus is on this retreat, those particular suttas. So usually it is stated outright. Sometimes you have to infer from the context whether it is or not. Yeah. This table, your table is number one in questioning. This table, everyone here, ready? We should have it. That's good. Yeah.
Sukhi Otsu Ajahn. I heard that amongst all the Nikayas, Kudaka Nikaya has the most corruption. I'm not sure whether this is true or not. So how do we differentiate the true suttas? And my second question is, is the Kudaka Nikaya fully translated now? Because I haven't seen any printed copy. Thank you.
Okay. So the corruption, I would say more that it's not so much corruption than late. It's not early Buddhism, not the word of the Buddha, it's later Buddhism. That's what I would say. Corruption, maybe not so much, but it's not the word of the Buddha. A lot of it is very obviously not the word of the Buddha. Some of it is commentarial work, like the Nidesa is a commentary on this Atthakavaka here. It's a commentary, it's in the same section as the same Nikaya as the actual text, which is kind of weird. So some of it is very late, like the Jataka tales are late. The Patisambhida Magga, which is like an Abhidhamma work, is late. Buddhavangsa is the sequence of the Buddhas, the 26 Buddhas into the past, that's late. Charyapitaka, the conduct of the Buddha, is late. The earliest part of the Kudaka Nikaya are the Dhammapada. This is the ones you need to know about. These are the most inspiring, and they're very similar to the rest of the suttas. Dhammapada, Udana, Itivuttaka, Sutta Nipata we're looking at now, mostly early, some may be a little bit late, but generally early, Sutta Nipata, So we have Dhammapada, Udana, Itivuttaka, Sutta Nipata, Terigata, Teragata. You have the verses of the elder nuns and the verses of the elder monks. Yeah? And that those are the six books of the Kudaka that are the earliest part of the Kudaka Nikaya. So focus on those. I don't want to be a fundamentalist, the Buddhist, and so I would say focus on that. But you can also read other things as well if you have time. And it can be very enjoyable to read some of the Jataka stories. Yeah, they're nice stories. And they can be enjoyable. But don't think that they are real Dhamma. They're not real Dhamma. Often they are anti-Dhamma. I'm serious. Sometimes they're not Buddhist at all. It's kind of really all over the place. And some of the idea, like the Santara Jataka, which is very, very famous in Buddhism, where the Buddha gives away his wife and children, right? You can't give away your wife and children. What kind of morality is that? It's bad, right? This is not Buddhism. We're not supposed to give away our husband or children or wife and children or whatever. That's the wrong conduct. So sometimes it gives a... this is what you learn about Buddhism. And many people in Buddhist countries, like in Thailand or in Sri Lanka, this is what they learn. They think that is Buddhism. It's bad. It's not Buddhism at all. It's something completely different. And so that's why you have to be careful. So you can read those stories, but you have to take them with a pinch of salt. Yeah, this is kind of very important with those stories. So that's how you kind of distinguish early and late, roughly. And I think most people would agree with that. You can tell from the style of writing and many, many different reasons why we can know that that is the case. And now I have forgotten your other question. What was the other question again?
The publication. But I think a few of these are already published. The Terigata. Terigata.
All of these are published.
All of it published.
Yeah, and they can be. They're also available now on suttacentral.net. So you can read them directly online, and you can also order books through that as well. The rest of the stuff, I wouldn't bother too much reading the rest of the stuff. Maybe the Jatakas, but the rest of the, I wouldn't even worry about it. You're going to probably fall asleep if you try to read it. It's some of it's really boring. Yeah.
Thank you, Ajahn.
Yeah. Please, just behind you. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, Ajahn, just one question about reading the sutta.
Mm.
I'm just referring to this sutta. Sometimes it's hard to know whether the Buddha is saying it as it is or is saying it metaphorically.
Sorry, can you say again?
Saying in metaphor or saying actually.
Oh, okay.
So like this case, the peril stems from those who take up arms.
Yeah.
I can just read it as...
Yeah.
Situation in Ukraine, actually fighting the actual situation.
Yeah.
Or is it in metaphor? So it may be hard to really figure out.
I think what you have to do, you have to go back to the Pali. The Pali word danda is more broad than arms. It has the idea of conflict, the idea of punishment. All of these ideas are part of the word danda. So if you read the English word, it's probably a bit narrow, but if you understand the full meaning of the Pali word, you get a more proper understanding of what is going on. So the word danda, is it meant metaphorically? I think it's probably meant quite weapons. Yeah, maybe it's metaphorical as well, the weapons of the tongue. Yeah, the speaking in a bad way maybe, and that kind of thing could maybe be included. But I think the literal meaning is certainly part of this, and maybe it can also be seen metaphorically as well. So maybe both literal and metaphorical. You can read it in both ways, I think. Yeah.
Okay. So for people like me who are not well versed with Pali, I have no hope at all.
No, you have hope. I guarantee you have hope. Lots of hope. So you just don't. You get the general idea anyway, right? You get the general idea that arms and these things are problematic, yeah? And it is about violence. And this is one of the reasons I like to do these kind of things, because I can be here to help bring out some of the broader meaning, yeah? This is kind of the whole point of being a monk, is to actually be able to give these teachings in a way which really people can understand more broadly. This is my job, and I'm very happy to do so. So you may ask, can you trust me? That might be your question. To that I would say, generally, I think you can trust me, but also, don't be too gullible. Know that everyone makes mistakes. No one is going to give you the full teaching. So take what I say. Don't be too skeptical. Yeah, I don't think I'm an evil person. And I'm not trying deliberately to lead you astray. But also understand that everyone has their limits. And that includes me. So don't, this is certainly not the final word on the suttas, but it is one way to help you to understand what is going on. I think something like that would be the right attitude, right, to have when I teach these things.
Thank you.
So let's have a break, everyone, and we'll come back in 15 minutes.